Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Everybody, hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here will be today's my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Man, Ben, you know what today is?
What is today, Jay?
It's fantasy football draft day.
It is fantasy football draft
day. It's fantasy football draft day. I know people are like, and we stopped listening.
And pause. We are out and that is done. So I am doing that. You're right. Although I will say the football season is something that from September through the beginning of February, that's when the Super Bowl is.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing to me how much it becomes like a central part of my life. And then the season ends and it's just gone.
Yeah.
You know, I follow like a small handful of things. Like we're big fans for the Virginia Tech Hokies. So yeah. Like I will periodically check in to see like how things are going with the team and all that type of stuff, to figure out like whether or not like we're going to be good. Like this could be our year.
This could be our year. Yeah,
we're starting.
We already lost the game.
We already, it's 0-1, but you know what? Like there have been plenty of instances where a team that went on to win the national championship lost their first game. Right.
Like that one time.
To
the Hokies.
Exactly. Tech beat Ohio State once upon a time. So in your faces.
Yeah.
Probably statistically speaking, Ohio State fans. But you're right. Fantasy football is upon us. And I think for the first time, I've actually like come into it like preemptively excited. Like a lot of times the fantasy season will kick off and I almost have to like convince myself like, Ben, you're going to like it once you're there. Like, and you're going to be glad you did it and it's going to be great. But like this go around, I'm just sort of like, heck yes, like football is upon us. Like, let's go.
I think, yeah. And like, I don't want to like talk too much about like playing the game or anything, but I think it's such a fascinating activity to do because like there is no doubt like it's, There is skill to be had in the game. Like,
oh, sure,
you could be good at it, and a lot of it will come down to like maybe your draft, like when you're picking the players for your team or whatever. But like even within that, like if you just go into like Instagram right now and type up like fantasy football draft guide, just look at how many videos pop up. I mean, it's endless. There is an endless pool of like what to do. Here's your sleeper picks. Here's the ones you should let your dumb friends pick. Like, there is a million opinions on it, and it's like, who knows who's right? Because at the end of the day, there's also just like a large smattering.
I mean, there's an absolute human element to the equation that no one can account for.
Right.
Like, there's always weird things that happen. There's always somebody who's supposed to be amazing who is a total bust. There's always somebody who's supposed to like who nobody's ever heard of who emerges out of nowhere and is like now like a household name. Like it's unbelievable.
There's always some random person in the group who doesn't even follow football. You just need someone to round them out and they set it to auto draft and they win the whole thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
which just speaks to the fact that like as much as you think you're skilled, as many waiver wire picks as you can possibly do, trying to schedule trades. I've never done a trade, but like maybe once, but like the point is that like, it's just, you could be as involved or uninvolved as you want. And you're just along for the ride.
Right. But the end effect though, is that like once, three times a week, possibly you can just turn something on and be invested in it for just the lightest of reasons. But sometimes you just need a little bit of a finger hold to be like, this is fun to watch now.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's amazing how that makes such a big difference. You're absolutely right. Like I think a lot about this with like Caitlin Clark, with the WNBA, because there's no doubt about it that like, I mean, there's a whole lot of things that have done a lot of good for the overall importance and prominence of women's sports. And that's something that I think has just been gaining a lot of speed for a long time.
Yeah.
But I do feel like Caitlin Clark has created like such an amount of buzz in the WNBA that is just drawing so much spotlight, so much attention. Like, and it's like, they're not even really winning, with her or anything.
Well, she's injured right now. She hasn't even been playing for a little bit.
Right, right.
Here, but let's see what the Fever's record is at the moment.
The Indiana Fever. We're going to Indianapolis, and like the season will have just ended by the time we get there, but we're like, oh man, it would have been so cool to go see her.
It would have been so cool. Yeah, they are presently sitting at 21-20, so they are they're just above 50.
Just above 50, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway, so yeah, football season is back, y'all. I mean, Commanders, if they're for the NFL, if there's ever been a season, this is it.
This is it, you know?
Like, we've had
Jaden Daniels.
We've had ones of people, like I would say as many as like six, write in saying that they had previously never cared about the NFL before, but now that they had heard us talk about the Commanders so much, they're kind of like, the team of my boys.
Yeah.
You know,
we've moved the needle on NFL viewership, you know, just call us Taylor Swift, basically.
Basically.
The same.
Yeah.
The same. Here's things I don't stand for in sports. One, people who hate on Taylor for being at games and for people liking football for that reason. Like, I don't understand. It's such a dumb reason not to like it. Get over yourself. The rising tide raises all ships. Okay. It's good for everyone. Like, it's not a talking point. Find something else to complain about. Number two, people who don't like Caitlin Clark. I also have the same exact argument. Like, I am not here for your argument. You have nothing to say. It's ridiculous. Like, I don't, stop it. Stop it.
If you have no idea any of the people we just said, then that's okay. Thank you for listening this far.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know what you mean. I think that these are people who are, in one way, shape or form, it's sort of like, if we're just inviting new people to the conversation and more people are interested, it's like, that's literally better for everyone.
Let me rephrase it. If you don't like Caitlin Clark, that's fine. But if you hate her specifically because of the attention she has brought to the sport, then I'm not okay with it.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Right. If you're like, I don't like her personality or something, that's up to you. I can't control that. But
where did Angel Reese go to college?
LSU.
Yeah. So maybe if you're like an LSU alumni, you're like, I'm not a big fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And it's and like, you know, and, I got, someday, and I got good reason.
Yeah. Good reason.
Oh!
And you know what? Someday she's going to make some of those layups. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
Boom.
Wow. So much shade is being thrown.
I'm so there for the Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese drama.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
So, Jay, now that we're talking about people who have brought prominence, we were having a rather interesting conversation in the office earlier today where the Isabel, you know, who edits the pop and also for Super Carlin Brothers and does all of our illustrating and design work and just does really, she has a lot of irons in the fire over here. She is someone who is I would say built different, but then you would assume that means I'm referring to like her structure, which is not I mean.
Where her arms are and where, stuff.
Yeah, precisely. Right. Yeah. No, she's built standard.
Built standard.
In that particular department. But like there, you know, Isabel walks the beat of what can only be described as her own drum. And I appreciate that about her.
Yeah.
And we know that she's going to go on to do big and extraordinary things out there in the world. And so I was asking her, because she's a big Swiftie, whether or not like Taylor grade fame was the thing, like that's the quest. Like, are you like, you know, because when she inevitably moves on, you know, from where she is here, you know, we'll be proud of her. If not, you know, like sad to see her leave. But I feel like it will happen eventually and she's going to go and do her thing. And so I was curious. I was like, what kind of fame is the appropriate amount of fame? Because I think at some point in time, there is something to be said for I remember that song from like Good Charlotte when we were growing up, like Lifestyles, the Rich and the Famous. It's like Lifestyles, the Rich and the Famous.
Yeah.
There I was complaining. Yeah. It's so easy to think like life is so easy for famous people. But then I also think about the fact like you can't go anywhere. You know, like you're always being photographed. Your personal life becomes like public gossip. Like, you know, everything is a thing all the time.
All the time.
And maybe for some people, like, that is like all part of the experience. And I could completely see that, you know, like I could see a world where some people are like, I want all of it. Like, nothing will be better to me than the first day a paparazzi person is like in my face taking a photo. Like, I will have arrived. You know, you just bask in the glory of the awesomeness that is yourself. But then sometimes as well, like, I remember who is the general guy from the movie Inglourious Basterds? Christoph Waltz.
Yeah.
Yes. Christoph Waltz. I always think about when he was accepting his Academy Award for his role in that movie, and he got on stage and just looked positively like nervous in what I would only describe as like a very endearing way. And I'm sure I've brought up this example before because it always stood out to me. But I always thought it was amazing that what you have here is a performer. Like, this is somebody who is like built to perform, and they are like so good at what they do. Like,
yeah,
completely, you know, like suck you in, believe they are that character, all that. And this is somebody who almost seemed like very, very, very nervous standing in front of all of his peers to accept the Academy Award, or also just the full weight of his entire career basically like resting on his shoulders in that particular moment.
Right.
And it occurred to me then that, like, just because actors, you know, their art form is to go and perform, doesn't necessarily mean that like the attention that comes from being that famous is also something that they desire. Does that make sense? Like
he just wants to be an actor, but doesn't mean he wants to be famous.
There's a very big difference between you expressing yourself through your art form, which is acting, which happens to come with a spotlight, and then also enjoying being in that spotlight when you're not on stage or when you're not on set.
Right. Like, sure.
That all tracks.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So like that's like the complicated layer of like, where is like the best place to be famous, where like, it's like, this is not going to impede your daily life. You can go about existing, but like, you still get that sense of like, oh, I totally made it. Like, I have succeeded in my field.
Right.
Do you have any, like, do you give any consideration to these types of things, or is there any like tier that stands out to you?
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know if you would call, like, you know, ourselves famous or anything. Like,
I tend not to.
Yeah. Some people, as like, you know, we have a wide audience here on the internet, which right. we are, you know, very grateful for and very lucky to have.
Right. Let me clarify by saying, of course, like, I know if you're like listening to the show, that might sound, I don't know, something, but like it's like when we go about like our lives, we are unimpeded.
Yeah.
Nothing like, yeah. Like, I mean, if you're in Disney World, somebody might say like, are you from the Super Carlin Brothers? Like,
right.
You know, like, and it happens in random occasions, but it's not frequent.
Well, Beth will often describe it as she's like, I think you are the perfect level of famous. Is that like, she's like, I don't want you to be any more famous.
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and this reminds me of Luke from the Outdoor Boys, who I was talking about, you know, on and on and on. And Allison, I feel like watched his entire catalog of videos and stuff, but he stepped away from making his content in the manner that he was, because he was like, it was starting to impede like his family life, and they couldn't go anywhere. And, you know, it's like, this is somebody whose passion is being either with his kids, wife, or by himself in the wilderness. So you can easily see where all of a sudden it's like, by sharing these experiences that oftentimes he's going through entirely on his own, being recognized at the supermarket might be not what he's hoping for.
Right, right. Let me look up the name of someone right now, because I have been thinking a little bit about this somewhat in the recently. All right, I don't know how to say his name. Nate Roos? Roos? How would you say that name?
Ooh, Nate Roos.
Roos. Okay, yeah. Nate Roos. I don't know if you guys know who that. Do you know who that is?
I don't have any idea.
Perhaps it's a certain level of, you know, agreeable fame then.
Yeah, there you go.
Nate Roos is the lead singer of the band Fun.
I'm familiar, but I'm not like well versed. I couldn't tell you like their most popular song.
Okay, all right. It's probably Some Nights, I think, is the
Some Nights.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Right. Exactly that one. That one gets stuck in my head a lot because I'll answer all right to a lot of questions, and that's like one of like the chorus lines in the song. Like, that's all right. That's all right. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that gets stuck in my head a lot. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I was looking up more. I was listening to that song a lot one day, and I like listened to it and I was like, I'm not entirely sure what I think the song is like about or anything. But I was looking it up, and the song is basically about, I mean, he wrote it, and it is about himself basically, and how he wants his art to move forward, because and that song in particular, Some Nights, is like the turning point for the band Fun. So basically what the song is about is like for the past, like the 10 years leading up to the making of that song, they had been really focused on like a very specific like indie style of music.
Okay.
And he felt like he was not getting to reach the people he wanted to reach with his music. Like, but he felt like the only way to reach a wider audience was to stop making like indie music and make more of like, you know, commercialized music for like a wider audience.
You know, that is always like one of those things. I remember the movie growing up, That Thing You Do. It's got, you know, like Tom Hanks in it, and it's about like a young band that's like kind of starting up, and they've got like, you know, like a hit that makes them really popular, and they go out,
right,
and like they start doing all these performances and stuff. And it's interesting when you compare it to like a lot of the biopics that have come out since then about like, what would it be, like Elton John or the band Queen or Bob Dylan, you know, like there's a lot of these. I think there's the Beatles are coming up in the next year or so, where it's like telling the saga of how these incredibly famous people came to be incredibly famous and like what their roots were like and where their song clicked off and, you know, all that type of stuff. Like, why did the song Bohemian Rhapsody exist in the first place? You know, like,
right,
Freddie Mercury is a genius, like all these things attached to their careers. But the thing that they have to their advantage when telling these stories is that the reason that they're telling the story is that the music itself that they're going to play in the film is incredibly iconic. Like, you've heard the songs, you know,
right,
like, because that's what, like, you know, the movie doesn't exist if you don't already know the song. So what always blew my mind about the movie That Thing You Do is that they were capable of going out there and creating a song that's an earworm, like,
right,
like someone in a room, because like, to me, I'm like, if you could go and write a hit song, like, why aren't people just going and writing hit
like
songs?
Why aren't they doing it?
Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like, and again, it's almost like the who's my guy, Christoph Waltz.
Yeah.
It's the same thing where it's like, you know, he might not enjoy like the actual literal spotlight just because his art form is being in it, if that makes sense. Like, you know, it's like he doesn't want to be the center of attention. He wants to perform. And it's like those two things are the same, but they have very different like motives that lead up to it. So it's interesting whenever I hear stories like this with artists where they're like, they decided to write like a top 40 hit, like,
right,
on purpose. And like, cause in my mind, I'm always like, opposed to,
well, it was like, I don't like, there's a little bit more to it. The song is, oh, okay, really, I mean, the song itself is like really clever, like the way it's doing it and stuff. Because it sounds like what he's basically saying is that, like, you know, I feel like I have something to say, or I feel like I know what I want to say and I want to get out there, but it's like, what's the point? Like, there's like the, and it feels like it's like I fought like making this transition to like sounding a certain way and making music that sounds like it's like for the radio, like, for a really long time, because like I don't like, I want to make music in this certain like style and I want things to say, but it's like, it's been 10 years and I've been doing it and I know I'm good at it, but like, it's not like growing the way I want it to. So like, but if I make it for this wider audience, then it feels like I'm abandoning my roots and then I sound different. And it's like, well, you know, like, am I selling out, or am I just getting what I want? Or like, is, you know, like, is it weird having one foot in one side or whatever? I don't know. But like, so as the song goes on, like, he gets sort of towards the end of it, and he like, there's like a little story in the song about how his sister fell for some con with a guy, like a con called love or whatever.
Okay.
And so he says, like, I look into my nephew's eyes and you wouldn't believe the most amazing things that can come from some terrible nights.
Oh yeah. Right. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Got chills a little bit.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. So basically, but as he says the word nights, he starts being auto-tuned and the auto tune. So that's like the lie. Is like the auto tuning. So basically what happened is, as far as the story is concerned, he's like, what the message there then is that, like, you know what? My sister made, like, something bad happened to her. And in the end, though, now I have my nephew and he's great. And that's like, it was a bad thing that happened, but a great thing came from it.
Right.
You know, so there's that. So I think like he's sort of like, basically that's like his justification sort of. It's like, you know what? Even if this is the wrong decision, it doesn't mean some great things can't come from it. But as he says the word night is when the song goes really auto-tuned in a way that like the band had never sounded ever before. And that's supposed to be like the transition moment from like the indie style to like the top 40 style.
That is like so fascinating.
I know. I was like reading about the song. I was like, this is like the, I love this song suddenly.
Like, that's a great, because it is like one of those things where it's like, if you're just listening to it, like as like background noise and it gets to that exact moment.
Yeah.
It's like you hear the little phrase and it's like, when I look into my nephew's eyes, you won't believe the most amazing thing. Like, you know, it's like a lot of times, like I hear that and I'm like, wait, your nephew, like, what does your nephew have to do with the song? Like, it feels like, to me, not listening to the lyrics and not really paying attention to the story properly, like, a lot of times it's like, what?
Well, I know. It's like, once you know what the intent of the song is, all the little, like, random sounding lyrics all, like, add up and, like, start making sense.
Yeah, right.
And stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I had never given it the courtesy to do. So then what you hear while you're the volume on your, you know, car is at, like, 12 and you can just barely kind of hear it, like, in the distance, is the crazy high-pitched auto-tune thing happen, and you're just like, music these days, like,
right?
And it's like if you talk to, like, that's the kind of thing where it's like, if you talk to them, you'd be like, oh, that's the point.
Right, that's the,
like,
point,
like, you're aware, like, this is not you leaning in, this is you, like, leaning in, but like as satire.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but whew, right over the head.
Yeah. And then there's another line in the song, and I can't tell, it's one of those, I don't know which interpretation I like of it more, because I feel like when you hear the lyric, it says, when I hear a song, it sounds like this one, or it's, when I hear a song, it sounds like this song. And I don't know whether he's saying swan or song.
Oh, okay.
So, like, if you said, like, this is my, like, if someone said this is their swan song, what would that mean?
That would mean that this is like their magnus opus. Is that how you say that? This is like their crowning achievement.
Okay. Well, then maybe he's talking about that song, because I think the word is swan, but I kept hearing it as, when I hear a song, it sounds like this one. I thought, like, to me, that almost makes more sense, because then it's like, when I hear songs on the radio, they sound like the song I'm singing right now. So maybe that's just what I have to do.
Right. You know? Right. Yes. It's very dicey in that way but you know, then you can look at it from a bunch of different perspectives. Like, you could look at, like, pipelines if you wanted to, and you know, you could talk about, like, Taylor Swift all day, because obviously, I mean, she's an anomaly of an existence of a person in the first place. Like, you know, we don't see many people do what she's done throughout her career. But, like, you could potentially make the argument that, like, someone early on advised her that, like, entering the music scene through, like, the country genre might be like a way to grab a foothold. And then, like, I would almost argue that, like, what she's done is she's moved away from her roots, but, like, only by perception, only by, like, that's like the way, like, the history book might show it. Like, you started as a country singer and then you became this pop star. But I would almost argue that she seems like a pop star that knew that the only way she could become a pop star was to grab a foothold as a country singer and then come back.
Yeah, it's so hard to know. It's like, I have no idea whether it feels hard to think that when she was like 16 or something, she was like, this is my plan, I'm gonna break into the music industry via country and then shift.
But if there's anybody, it'd be her.
Well, I mean, maybe, yeah, you're right. But maybe when you're like a teenager, you're just like, hey, I would love to be a country star or whatever, and then you get, you know, you do it and you're like, well, actually, I like other kinds of music and I want to make other kinds of music. You know, I don't know.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, and it's a huge leap. I mean, I was literally just talking to Alice about it the other day, like with us where, you know, our year one of Super Carlin Brothers was very different from like where we ultimately went. And the day that we decided to make like, you know, fandom centric content, it felt like we were like abandoning the people who got us to that point, you know, and that was really difficult. And the really comical thing that we've already pointed out in the past is almost like Super Carlin Brothers started one way, like a conversation between two brothers, and became about fandoms. And then Popcorn Culture was intended to be about fandoms and became a conversation between two brothers.
Right.
Like so in like our own weird way, it's like we sort of like came
full circle. Yeah.
You know, it's like we always had this in us. We always wanted to do this thing, but like it was almost like what would get you to the point where you can do that thing, like,
right?
Like sometimes and I have no idea whether or not like the phrasing I would want to use is like paying your dues, like to get to the point where you get to use the platform the way that you want to use the platform. Like that's like a power you can like earn for yourself at some point in time,
right?
Or if it's just sort of like all part of the meandering path and what you do with it and when, if that makes sense. Another interesting person we could look at would be Matthew McConaughey, who I feel like sort of came out of the gates as an actor doing like a lot of these like rom-com like roles.
Right.
You know, like that was sort of like he was like Mr. Rom-com, you know, like the super charming, good looking counterpart that's kind of quirky, kind of funny, like, you know, like whatever.
Right.
And, you know, he's talking to his agent and he's like, well, I want to do other stuff. Like I want to be like taken, I don't know.
More serious roles.
Exactly. Yeah. More serious roles, I guess. I'm sure people took him seriously for what he was good at, you know?
Right.
But is he then the right person? Like because agents and everything are sort of like, you're not what people picture when they imagine a crazy futuristic space drama, you know, like,
right.
Which is what Christopher Nolan's Interstellar ends up being, where he's the lead guy.
Yeah.
You know, so he takes like 5 years off of like film to almost like let the dust settle.
Yeah.
You know, like okay, I'm gonna go away for a little while. I'm comfortable. I'm okay. I can go do other projects and that type of thing, and then come back. And then people are like, oh yeah, I remember this guy from The Thing. But it's not like you remember him from The Thing from like last year.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it's almost like, you know, you gotta, but if he wanted to do Interstellar from day one, maybe somebody says no when he never gets off the ground.
Right.
And it's like, it's so in that way, it doesn't feel like paying your dues. It doesn't feel like selling out. It just sort of feels like, you know, not all ladders go straight up, you know, if that makes sense. Like,
like not all growth is linear.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, it's just like, you know, you're just
spaghetti out there, you know?
You're spaghetti out there. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Other song that I was also thinking about that is only very barely tangentially related, but it was reminding me of the song that you were saying, Some Nights by Fun, is I have been obsessed basically ever since it came out back in 2020 with Bo Burnham's Inside.
Yeah.
And there's also very similarly, like, he's got this like comedy album basically that's sort of like critiquing or otherwise observing or documenting like the online sphere at this moment. So like throughout the course of it, you know, it's during the pandemic and you know, if you watch it, I think on Netflix, a lot of what you're witnessing is sort of him, what appears to be like kind of going crazy, like living inside of this like small little house. And he's like in there and it's like he's growing a beard and it's kind of slowly getting taken over with takeout boxes and it's a mess and he looks exhausted and all that type of thing. But some of it's also supposed to be about like content creator burnout and what it's like to consume content on the internet. And he has one of the songs, which is just otherwise, you know, feels very funny. It's called White Woman's Instagram. And it's going through like all the classic things that you could stereotypically find in posts. So it's like tiny pumpkins, latte foam art, messages written in the sand. Like, you know, I can't even tell if I'm like singing this song in my head and that's the reason I can think of the examples.
Right. Probably.
Or, like, do those come in that order? But then it breaks at some point in time. And so it's critiquing on some level the way that we become homogenous in our social media posts. Like we're using these things as like ways to be unique, but the ways in which we're unique is awfully similar to the ways everybody else is being unique.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah.
Or something. And I can't even say that I'm smart enough to understand Bo Burnham in all of his cleverness, because he's just smarter than me. But it gets this one really like sweet moment of the song where the post that the white woman, air quotes, is putting onto her page is about like her mother and how she's been gone for 10 years. And she's basically writing like a note to her mom saying like, you know, I've got a boyfriend and I've got my own apartment and I've got a job and things are going well. And like, you know, I'm still getting used to you being gone. It still feels strange, like blah, blah, blah. This is very like emotionally impactful moment that's otherwise tucked into this song that just feels like pure nonsense and silliness. And it's crazy because I even feel like what he's doing there is almost exactly what your guy from some nights did. Nate Roos, where it's like what he's effectively done is like he feels as though he's like abandoned his roots. Maybe if we want to assume that's the point of the song. And like, by creating this thing, but what he also created in the process of writing a top 40 song is actually really clever and has layers to it and is kind of amazing. So it's like even his version of, you know, and again, major air quotes, selling out isn't really selling out because it's kind of genius.
Right.
You know, and so it's like, I think even as jaded or exhausted or worn out as we might get with something like social media and like the pressure that it can put on you, the keeping up with the Joneses, the comparison games, like all the things that the social media is not good at, I feel like what Bo Burnham is pointing out is like, it's like, yes, there are all these like stereotypical things and yes, we will inadvertently fall into boxes and like, you know, like those things are going to happen, but also this is a really special application. Like this is maybe social media at its absolute best. Like this is somebody speaking from their heart. This is somebody trying to, you know, it's like the modern day version of like visiting a gravesite. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. It's honoring someone you loved who's gone. And you're just like, you are spiritually connecting with them. You are emotionally like releasing something from within you. It's like whoever this fictional person is who's writing this note to her mom, it's like, it's a good thing. It like, that's it, you know?
Right.
It's like good things can come from bad places if you want to be that jaded about it.
Right.
That
sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to call social media bad. I understand what I do for a living, but I like, But you get the meaning. Like we've all been impacted by this thing that's become omnipresent.
Yeah. Yes. It is unavoidable. It feels often.
It does. Time. Yeah.
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 For sure. Yeah.
That was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it was.
Did we do okay at music?
Oh man, maybe.
Are we growing?
Oh, perhaps.
Perhaps. Anyway, transition.
Transition.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. So often when I regale you all with my business ideas, they seem to come from the far away past. But more recently, I had contemplated trying out a sawmill. Not, you know, some like huge structure or building, just like a small little guy that I could use to break down lumber on my land and potentially use it to, and build a house, or more likely make a bench. But just like running a business, I quickly learned that it requires like 53 different hats, not counting the required hard hat for safety, cutting, processing, drying, all before you've hammered in a single nail. And it reminds me so much of running a business. Not every task requires a whole person or employee, and starting out, those expenses you can't always afford. It means you end up doing a little bit of a lot of different tasks, and that's where Shopify is absolutely clutch. Shopify is the ultimate way to get your business started in no time. With their easy-to-use templates, you can start selling right away, and from there, it can help you to write product descriptions, touch up photos, track inventory, sales, and so much more. So turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/poppop. Let's go to shopify.com/poppop. One last time for safety, shopify.com/poppop. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Washington Red Raspberries. You know how eating healthy sometimes feels like a punishment? Like, congrats, here is your charred, hard pass. But that's why I'm personally obsessed with frozen Washington Red Raspberries, because these are not just any raspberries. They are grown by American family farmers in Washington State, picked at peak ripeness and frozen within hours so they keep all that fresh off the field flavor. You know the stuff. There's no added sugar, just pure fruit magic, and they're loaded with fiber, vitamin C, and antioxidants. Oh, and they're only 80 calories a cup. Boom! Mic drop. Or, my mic is actually attached to like a stand, but you know. I personally toss them in smoothies, swirl them into yogurt, even sprinkle them onto oatmeal. It's just an instant upgrade. They're naturally low in sugar, and like I said, super high in fiber, and honestly, one of the best kept secrets in the freezer aisle. And you can pretty much snag them anywhere. Costco, Kroger, Meijer, and Winco Foods. Just look for Product of the US on the bag. Bonus, keep an eye out for gems like the Kirkland's Three Berry Blend Muffins at Costco, or Smucker's Peanut Butter and Raspberry Uncrustables. Those are actually Addison's favorite. So, support local American farmers and get year-round flavor? Yes, please. Hit up redraz.org, that's redraz.org, for recipes, tips, and more raspberry greatness.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
All right, Jay, I don't know for sure. Over this past weekend, let me back up. I don't know whether or not what I'm about to say is going to be a bad take.
Oh boy. Well, now let's hear it.
Let's hear it. This past weekend, we went to the lake with our whole extended family. And, I realized that maybe like, whether or not it was like unintentional or like maybe with a degree of intention, I think that maybe like a parenting decision that I subconsciously made became apparent to me.
Okay.
Which is, I don't ever want to tell Addison what to fear. Like, it's like, I want her to assume all things are good until she experiences them otherwise.
Okay, like what? What's your example here?
Bees.
Oh, bees.
Bees, I think, would be a fair example. In this particular example, I think dragonflies would really even more specifically be what's going on. But since we've been going out on the boat, and I don't know if this is a mid-Atlantic thing. I feel like we see them in Vermont too, so it must be at least more than just here. But dragonflies, or possibly even mayflies, I think that a friend of mine instructed me once that real dragonflies are different, and most likely what you're calling a dragonfly is a mayfly. But
interesting.
Not important for the purposes of this conversation. One way or another, you know what I speak of. And when we go out on the boat, a lot of times they are like hovering over the water and, you know, like you can see them fly around. And so ever since we've been going out in the boat, I've always instructed Addison to hold her finger out like a pointer and allow the dragonfly to land on her finger. And the idea is that like, I would rather her not have any preconceived notion about insects at all, that they are like dangerous or gross or unacceptable or anything.
Right.
So like if we find like an ant in our house, like we don't like go and stomp it. We like pick it up and we take it outside and we put it on a blade of grass.
Right.
Like, you know, it's not that I think there's anything wrong. Like, I've set ant traps before too. I don't want ants in my house. But the idea in my mind is I don't want her to think that this is like a declarative perspective on how you're supposed to react to something like an insect or a dragonfly or a bee. So it's like, she hasn't been stung by a bee yet. And maybe one day that will happen. And I have told her that they can sting, but they are not out there to sting you.
Right.
Like, and so the end result is that, like, I feel like lately she's been like very positively, very receptive to like when she sees insects. Like there was a day that we were having like a little party because we had purchased this thing at a silent auction where Anna and Elsa would show up at the house in full costume garb.
Yeah.
And so we had like a little tea party and invited all of our little friends. And one of her friends was out on our sidewalk and saw an insect and went and jumped on it. And Addie was like, no, like, and she came and she was like, Daddy, the insect died. And I was like, you know, so like we went over and it actually wasn't dead. So we like picked it up and we like carefully carried it over to the grass and we set it in and we like, you know, like, we're like, okay, I think it's going to be okay. And I have no idea if it was or not.
Probably
not.
Right. Yeah.
Probably not. But like, that was sort of like the way that she reacted to it. But then this past weekend, we were having this interaction where the dragonflies or the mayflies or whatever they were landing on us and doing some version of like either like fixing themselves to like our arms or whatever, but it felt like a very mild sting,
right? Know, yeah, like a little bite or something. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And so it was funny because I felt like everybody was getting irritated with with like the dragonflies, but like everything I have told Addison up to that point was like, these are fun. Like, when you see them flying around, stick your finger out, see if they land on it.
Right.
It's like, hi, dragonfly. Like, yeah. You know, this is a good thing. And so I think what was occurring to me as I was watching other people be annoyed with them, and I was watching Addison witness other people be annoyed with them, is that I was like, I wonder if that's like influencing her own perspective on like the dragonflies.
Right.
You know, it's like she's learning the opinion that other people are exhibiting rather than experiencing it for herself, which is what I think I realized. I was like, I don't ever want to like overly concern the like how bad something can be so much as just put her in the situation and allow it to happen naturally.
Right.
It's a big thing. And I know that you guys did the same thing when you were raising your kids too, because I was guilty of the opposite, which would be like, if Luke was like a little, like 18 months old and running down the hallway and like fell flat on his face, I would gasp and freak out and like let him know that what just happened was a significant fall. But a lot of times what you should do around young kids is not gasp. Like, let them tell you whether or not.
Right. Like are they actually in pain?
Are they actually in pain? Because if they just fall down and pick themselves right back up and keep playing none the wiser, it's no big deal. But sometimes it's like there's different things. It's like maybe it's the attention of the parents all of a sudden like all crowding around you. Then it's kind of like, oh, maybe it did hurt. Like,
yeah, right. Like, yeah,
this got me a lot of attention.
Right.
And certainly in some cases it just simply does hurt. You know, like we've had Addie fall a couple of times and she always hurts her face. You know, and so it's kind of like, ah, crap. But I was curious what your thoughts on this were, or if you've ever had like a moment in your life where somebody like told you to fear something and then you did because like it was like almost like the learned opinion towards something.
Let's see. I mean, I think that's a really good approach. And that's like, yeah, I don't like to there's weird like lines, like, you know, when we were on like the when we went to like on the cruise ship, for example. I remember one of the first things I did with the boys, because like, you know, our room had like a little balcony thing on it, was just like go out there. And I very intentionally tried to scare the pants off them about like standing on chairs or tables next to the railing.
Right. You know? Right. Yes. I mean, and there is very minimal barrier. That's a good point.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? This isn't something I can let you learn about, you know?
That's a good point.
Learn by doing. I gotta, you cannot fall off this. We're not going to let that happen. We're not going to let that happen.
Right.
You need to be afraid of that. But then there's other things. Yeah. Where it's like, I just, you know, just let them do it. Cause chances are, it's like with like the jumping off the rocks or whatever. It's like, you know, you could tell them it's going to hurt, you know, oh, now be careful. Cause if you land bad, it's going to hurt or whatever.
Right.
But it's like, you know, or they're just going to jump and they're going to land in the water and it's going to be fine. And if you tell them it might hurt, then they'll never do it.
Exactly. You know? Yes. Yes. Right. Yeah. I think a big one for us when we were kids that kind of got us was we would go fishing every year while we were in Vermont, and we would catch a particular kind of perch that is known for having like kind of spiny like gills yeah. and top fins,
yeah, dorsal fins. Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's the kind of thing that if you grab them incorrectly, you might get like a couple like little pinprick type situations.
Yeah.
And so I think when we were growing up, like our dad and grandpa, when they were teaching us how to fish, were just basically advising us like, hey, you need to like be careful the way you handle them, because like if you're not, like they can like cut you. And it's like, it's kind of funny because like if you handle paper wrong, it can cut you.
Right.
And like, for, not for nothing, but like, I think half the time paper cuts hurt worse than the little pinpricks I got from the fish.
Right.
You know, but like, I got it in my head that it was like, oh, now you gotta be really careful around like the way that we handle these fish. And like, so it became like a big thing where like, you know, you'd have the fish on the fishing line, like hanging off of like the hook or whatever. And you're sort of doing this, like your hand is out and it's like, oh gosh. Like I might hurt myself
right
by doing this. And it's like, well, you're not going to hurt yourself. Like it's like, should you be cautious? Is it a living creature? Should you be respectful? All those things. Yes, of course. But like, also it's just sort of, it's more of like, it was a much more mild caution that I took too seriously.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean, where it was like, because it could hurt a little, you need to be extremely careful.
Right.
Right. Right. And it's like some amount of pain isn't worth not like because it might hurt a little isn't a reason to avoid something entirely. It's like, it, like a little bit of pain is just like, you know, it's not going to kill you. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of times, you know, when, yeah, like if you're a kid though, and you're like holding a live animal and it's like, or like a wild animal, I guess, and it like jerks and hits you and you're bleeding all of a sudden, maybe you're like really freaking out, but it's just like, you're right. Like, you know, the worst thing it could do was give you like kind of a scrape.
Right. You know? Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I mean, like it would be just as common, like, you know, in fact, it even happens. I feel like half the time, like when we get home, like, you know, the dogs are always so excited to see us. So the first thing they do when I walk in the door is they'll jump on me.
Right.
And half the time that means I end up getting like a big long scrape down like my, you know, my upper thigh or my shins or whatever, because they jump up and I go to like, kind of like push them back down to the ground or whatever. And as they go down, their claws just scratch
you. Yeah.
That's way worse than anything the fish has ever done to me.
Exactly.
But why did I have such a specific fear around the fish? I don't know. Maybe you just needed like more time with it.
Yeah.
You know, and getting used to what that could be like and stuff like that. But such an unnecessary fear. And similarly with fishing, the other one was just the hook itself. So if you've never looked closely or you've never gone fishing before or anything, the way that fishing hooks work is that they obviously come up in like a J shape or whatever. And there's usually like a downward facing barb going the opposite direction. And that barb is there so that like when it hooks the fish, it basically is like an extra layer, a barrier that prevents the hook from coming back out. Exactly. And some people clip those off, you know, for safety or out of, you know, like whatever, like that's a common thing to do. But the big thing too with the hooks then is that if they get caught in your skin, that they have
do the same thing
and it then becomes very difficult to like pull back out. So another instance I remember, I think I was 20, like I much older, you know, and we had done a lot of fishing by that point in our lives.
Yeah.
And I remember we were out on the boat and it was early in the morning. I was probably like 6 and we had all gotten up. We had our coffee. We're out there and me and you and dad and was Tyler out there? It doesn't matter. But like a group of us were out on the boat, you know, in sight of the house. We weren't even that far away. And I was going to take the fish off and it just sort of like flailed in my hand. And I like, you know, kind of moved one hand over and the hook was still in the fish's mouth and also in my hand. And this is like a thing that from childhood, it was maybe like the first time it ever actually like happened to me. But from childhood, it was a big thing that dad made a big deal about. Like, you don't want to get the hook in your hand because it's going to hurt a lot. And it's going to be hard to get out. And it's a thing. And so I think there as like a 20-year-old who has certainly experienced much more pain than this hook being in my hand, I passed out, like,
right,
like lost consciousness,
yeah,
over this thing. And it's like, this is so dumb. It's not a big deal.
Right.
I've endured so many more painful experiences. Like, why did this get me so bad? So anyway, like I know how like toxic at times my own imagination can get when I'm instructed to the potential fears of an outcome. And so I've tried really hard to not advise Addison or fill her brain with what those outcomes can be.
Could be, yeah.
But the flip side to this perspective or this methodology is that then I'm also not instructing her on potential dangers.
Right.
You know, like a bee can sting you. And as much as people usually compare mild pain to, oh, that's like a bee sting, no big deal. Bee stings hurt.
Bee stings hurt.
Yeah. Like maybe I'm just like mildly allergic. I have no idea, but like every single bee sting I've ever gotten, I'm like, man, this sucks for the next day. Like,
yeah, no, yeah. Fun. I mean, I've got, yeah, I think, yeah, bee stings can vary from person to person, but yeah, I've had some that they like hurt for, yeah, like just hours. Yeah. Next morning, just right. Like big puffy gross or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Don't like them.
Right.
Not a fan. But you're right. But like the thing about bees is like they're not going to sting you unless you go like riling them up, you know?
Exactly. And you know, most of the time what happens when people are getting severe bee stings, I think, is that like they've like a nest has accidentally been disturbed. And it's like it's really like there's not a major way to avoid those instances other than just extreme caution. Like, you know, because most of the time it's accidental on the bee's part and on your part.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. What do you do about flies in your house?
I don't really have a strategy.
No. Do you have flies in your house ever?
No. I mean.
More, I mean, not like, you know, like, well, there's just there's always flies.
Right. Like, it would be ridiculous to say, no, I've never had a fly in my house. Certainly I have. And it's not a common issue.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I think we just open the doors and hope they fly out or kind of like shoo them out. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, fruit flies, I would say, are more common. And I've got like a little thing that plugs into the wall that like attracts them.
Yeah. I've got one of those too. Yeah. For the fruit flies. We have, you know, I've got three boys and they hate closing doors ever. So flies get in our house all the time. It's super annoying.
So the open doors is the method in, not the method out.
Oh yeah. You can't leave the door open for flies to go out. They're just coming right in.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to let more in. No good. I'm not the kind of person that can have a fly buzzing around in the room. Like that little like sound, you know, I cannot not pay attention to it. It will distract me. And I have a lot of windows and they will try and like fly at them and get stuck behind the blinds. And they're so, I just like, if I'm watching TV and I have a fly continuously buzzing around my room, like the house, it's like, can't handle it.
I've seen that episode of Breaking Bad. I get you.
Yeah. It's so annoying. I have got a little tennis racket that has a little button on the side. And if you're holding the button and you hit the fly, it will pop, it will zap it.
Oh,
it is like an electric tennis racket.
Wow.
Specifically for flies.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. So on the other hand, even though flies really can't hurt you almost at all, they're not like horse flies. They're not biting me or anything.
Right.
But my kids, if they see a fly, they'll be like, daddy, get the thing. So I'm really teaching them like, you see a fly, kill it.
Kill it. Yeah. Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
The enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically for the injustice of having annoyed me.
Yeah. I mean. You know,
yeah,
that's fair enough.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they it can be irritating.
They broke the covenant. You know, it's like if you're outside, I'm not going to go outside and just like, you know, whack flies or anything. I'm not crazy.
Right.
You come in my house. He must be buzzing on.
Right. Buzzing on.
He must be buzzing on.
Like the door's probably open. You came in that way.
Door's open. You can exit that way. Except you know what? The door's not open because I'm not letting any more of your friends in.
Right.
Yeah. You made a bad decision coming in here, fly.
That tracks. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. Well, so that was my cue. It was occurring to me in real time while I was watching everybody complain about the mayflies. And I was like, oh, it's like, I am now like, I think it's like clicking into gear. So I'm like, I think I've realized what my approach is to like, let her like, I really don't mean it like a find out the hard way. I just mean like, it's not not all these things are inevitable. Like,
right.
She will not necessarily have like when we were at the lake earlier this week this year for the 4th of July, we ran into like a millipede and it's like the millipede, this particular one couldn't harm you in any way, shape or form. So it's like, well, they're kind of creepy looking. It's like, it's, you know, she was like, can we pick it up? And I was like, you betcha. Like, let's pick it up. Cause it's like, there's not anything bad that can happen from it.
Yeah.
You know, at least not where we live.
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally agree with you on that front. It's like, if the worst case scenario is like death or something, like maybe it's worth like bringing up something. If the worst case scenario is that, like, it might be like a smidge creepy or it like could prick you or something, it's like, just, it's not probably not like such a big deal.
Right.
You know, like I can imagine someone handing like a kid a rose and just being like, be really careful because it's got thorns or whatever.
Then all of a sudden it's like the experience attached to roses. It's like overly cautious.
Yeah.
It's like, it's pretty easy. You know, it's funny that in Name of the Wind, there's a specific instance where, and I don't even remember what it is, but he's referring to something as like a broken glass kind of dangerous. And what that means is that like broken glass can hurt you, but only if you interact with it directly on purpose.
Yeah.
But like, you have to go to it. It can't come to you. And in the meantime, if it's just there, like, it can't do anything to you.
Yeah.
Like, it's not dangerous until you've interacted with it.
Right.
And in some ways it feels like, yeah, that there could be instances like that.
Yeah. Like, I remember one time we were on some like little like nature walk, and there was like a little creek where you could like, you know, You could go, you know, jump on the rocks or whatever.
Right.
And I remember the boys just like sprinting ahead and they found it and they were jumping on the rocks. And, you know, like there's part of you that wants to be like, oh, like, be careful, you know, be, don't fall or whatever.
Right.
But then, you know, inevitably they do. And part of me is like, you know, like the worst thing that can happen is they can get wet, basically.
Right.
Like, it's not like a roaring rapid or anything. It's like a, you know, a 5-inch creek here.
Sure.
I'm standing right here.
Right. Right.
You know, yes. Like, could they jump and fall and like bang their elbow? Like, yeah, sure. Sure. But like, you're right. It's like, it's not worth being like, guys, just stop, you know, because it's like, just, you know what, go ahead and play and be aware that the rocks could be slippery, but otherwise, like, the worst thing that can happen is that you're going to get wet. And that's, you know what? That's what's going to happen if you do it. So just be ready.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's the, like, the my favorite Newt's Commander quote, which is that, like, worrying just means you suffer twice.
Exactly.
Which
exactly.
I know anybody listening at home is like, okay, Ben, Mr. Anxiety over there. Like, you know, it's like, I know.
Right.
But, like, there are some things I'm better at. Right. Like, social interactions, fear of colossal.
No, it's too late. It's too late for you, Ben, but not for Addison.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the other example I think I was giving to somebody over the weekend is the idea of like things that come naturally to people sometimes means they don't have to learn everything. Like, you know, if you can go and just like swing a baseball bat perfectly, like, I mean, chances are in order to get really, really good, you're still going to have to like learn lots of tips and tricks and skills and, you know, drills and stuff like that to refine even better. But then there's like the person who like picks it up and doesn't swing naturally and they've got to learn everything from the very beginning. It's like that person might go on to be a better coach because they went through all of it.
This is, oh man, we just watched the movie Monsters U, and that's basically it. That's the whole movie.
Yeah, is that like, Sully's a natural scarer?
Is that like, yeah, like Sully is naturally scary and like doesn't really have to work that hard, whereas Mike is not really very scary at all. And he goes through and does literally all the work you can possibly do, reads all the textbooks, does all the studying, goes to class, like gets there, and then, you know, finally makes his way into a kid's bedroom and lo and behold, he's just not scary.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, he's done it all. He's put in all the work, but it's still like, it doesn't matter. But then like, but he knows how to be scary. He's just not scary.
Right. So and then he's the ultimate partner to Sully.
To Sully, who he can like, you know, channel off his wisdom into to make this otherwise naturally scary guy even scarier.
Exactly.
Which then, you know, their combined teamwork, you know, fills an entire room of canisters through the door and it's, you know, yeah, crazy. Yeah.
So maybe now my gift to Addison is I have chronic anxiety so that you so you'll be better off.
There you go. Yeah. You can be the Mike Wazowski to her Sully.
It'll precisely.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean, out of all the characters from Monsters, Inc. that Addison absolutely fits the mold for.
Yes, it's Sully.
It's Sully.
Definitely no small little girls
with pigtails running around in a pink oversized top. Mm-mm. Yeah, nope, none whatsoever.
Yep.
No, I love that. That's pretty.
Kitty.
Kitty. Oh man, talk about things. I have, that's another one that I've like, whenever we go on walks, we have a very big emphasis on greeting all of the neighborhood cats.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, she's got the whole routine down now. Like,
right.
You know, it's like,
is that what she says? Kitty?
No, she doesn't say kitty. She's just, well, what does she say? I don't know. She just gets excited.
Okay.
But then we have to like go, we sit down, we extend our hand, we can let them come over, say hello, do the whole thing. But you know, sometimes they don't want to come say hello and that's just okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
We just try to be all right with that. We move on. Maybe next time.
You should have that. Feel like you could take this up, because I know you've told me many times you'll be like laying in bed and you'll be like replaying a conversation and you'll be like, what did that mean? Who did that mean? Who did that mean? But you just got to, when you get to those moments, you should think about the dog. Like, you know what? Sometimes they just didn't want to come say hi, and that's okay.
And that's okay.
You know what? Like maybe that was taken the wrong way, but even if it was. That's okay.
See, even as you say that though, in my mind, I'm like, but no, Jay, I've done such a meticulous job throughout my whole life of making sure that every exchange that I had the ability to have control over, I maintained control over. And if I didn't, then I fixed it. And the only reason why I am where I am today, which I'm holding on by just the most mere of threads, mm-hmm, is because I have gone to extraordinary and exhaustive efforts to make sure that every single person I interact with walks away thinking that it was a positive exchange and not a negative exchange. And if I start to loosen my grip on that, then my entire world will probably start crumbling in around me and I'll lose everybody.
Not even a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, I'm joking, but also being completely honest.
Yeah. I know, Ben. I know.
That's the concern. I'm just doing my best.
Doing my best. Yeah. But you know what? It's okay. You know, sometimes the dog doesn't want to come over.
Sometimes the dog doesn't want to come over and everything is fine. Everything's okay. You know? Yeah. Oh, man. You got one last transition in you?
I guess so. Ben?
Yeah.
My prediction came true.
What's the prediction have to do with? Hold on. Give me like a little bit, but not a lot of it.
It has to do with your wife.
It has to do with my wife. Your prediction came true. Has to do with my wife who has, let's see. Okay. Let's think here. She likes Mahjong.
That's exactly it.
No way! Nailed it.
That's exactly it.
Oh my gosh. Literally, so this past weekend, Beth introduced her to the game, and just this morning, she was on Facebook Marketplace and she was like, oh my gosh, look, this is an entire set for just $100. Should I go get it? And I was like, you should. I don't know if she did, but yes. So she played
found it. I could totally see Alice being the person I know who found like an antique Mahjong set made out of like, you know, wood and you know, ivory and tears, you know.
You're absolutely correct. Like this is the kind of thing that now that it's on her radar, she will like infiltrate the depths of the history of houses, and she'll find someone who's like great grandmother was a former world-class champion Mahjong player, and now she's got the hand engraved stones.
Exactly.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. The ones that Andy Dufresne used to carve his way out of prison with.
You know, the part of Shawshank Redemption where Andy and Red play Mahjong with Brooks for 45 uninterrupted minutes.
Dude, yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. One of my absolute favorite aspects of the movie Shawshank Redemption is when he's going out and carving. he gets a rock hammer, and this is like the reason he wants it as like part of his like.
So he says.
Is paraphernalia the right word? No. No, there's a term for goods you're not supposed to have.
Not like commissary.
No, not the commissary. No. Oh my gosh, what am I trying to think of? Contraband.
Whew, we were circling around it.
We were. But he wants this little rock hammer, and he says the reason is because he wants to make a chess set out of like the onyx and marble.
Yeah, the rocks in the yard and stuff.
Yeah. He makes some really gorgeous ones that the warden eventually throws at the poster, and when it goes straight through the poster, that's when they discover the hole. And anyway, so if you haven't seen Shawshank, I just ruined it.
But also, probably not. It's more than just that one moment, you know.
It is more than just
that one. It is such moment. I mean, how often do you really look at a man's shoes?
It's a great question. Okay, so you predicted that Alice would enjoy Mahjong.
I think my prediction was that before the end of the year, she'd be asked to play Mahjong.
You have said this before.
Yeah.
Yes, it is definitely like one of those things where it seems like it is an activity that is catching on in a way that is rather unique. Mm-hmm. The thing that I think is going to be very interesting about it is that is whether or not that we didn't just create two rival clans here in the greater Roanoke area, because Alice has like her group of like seance girls.
Yeah.
Of whom, I mean, that is kind of like their joking title. It's like what their group chat is called or whatever, but yeah, you know, like the people who did the seance when we were like on tour with their Ouija boards and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
They just do other cool things as well, like make candles and hang out and do ice baths and whatnot. But I could see a world where she goes and creates like her Mahjong group, and Beth has her Mahjong group, and eventually the two will collide, and it will be like, whoa. Now we have a tournament.
Now we have a tournament of Zhong.
A Zhong off. It seemed really interesting. It was really kind of fascinating because like I was sitting there while they were playing Mahjong, and I was sort of like looking for a couple of different things on the internet, just doing some like research type stuff, and kind of vaguely listening in on everything they were saying. And every single word that came out of their mouths sounded like complete and utter nonsense to me. I was like a scrap and a pip and a like a fish and a squirrely do.
You got a red dragon, a green dragon, soap. That's the white dragon for some reason.
For some reason,
yeah. You know, I'd have a pung. Okay. That's like a run of three. You got the one bam bird. You got cracks and dots and
I'm recognizing some of these words, although exactly. One of those could have been made up and I wouldn't know which one. I'm going with pung.
Pung is a thing.
Okay. That would have been really funny if you were just like, haha, I'm gonna sneak one in here.
Got in there. Nope. Those are our real Mahjong words.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's the Charleston. There's building the wall. There's so many fun Mahjong words, for sure. I think that's half the fun is just playing, is saying the words and being all clicky with the pieces.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, they're very satisfying.
They are very satisfying for sure.
The only thing I would say, I loved the pieces. I loved the mat. The one thing I would say I wasn't a huge fan of was the little racks. They're like kind of like the colorful plexiglass.
We need better racks for my personal set.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. The rest of, they are not in keeping.
No, they're not.
No, the rest of it looks very like fun and fancy. And then the racks just look like cheap plastic.
They almost look like they are meant to be at like a rave and they hold like that evening's signature cocktail. And there's probably like an ice cube that lights up when you drop it inside.
That's exactly what it looks like. Yeah. They could be better. Don't worry. The fact that Beth is into Mahjong now means I have just like a whole like laundry list of like cool
gift, you know, ideas.
Yeah, gift accessories I can now get for various occasions.
This is the best too, because it means like exactly like what we expect Alice will probably find in her like someone's like, you know, backyard time capsule or whatever.
Yeah.
If you brought this up several months ago when Beth got into it for the first time, but the game of Mahjong is kind of difficult to find a way to play, which seems very surprising given like the internet and apps and the way that almost all other games are readily accessible. But Mahjong does seem like it's difficult to acquire and is rather expensive, but I could see a world where like, you know, if you give her like, you know, small pieces that contribute to her set over time, it's like it will be like a little treasure trove.
Exactly what it is, Ben. It's exactly what it is. And I love game accessories.
Yeah,
like this is such a weak spot for me, because you know that is exactly how I feel like when I roll up at the Pokemon tournament and I get to roll out my cool mat and I have my fun dice and my neat little dice box and my foreign sleeves, and it's like, oh yeah, I came prepared. Okay.
Yeah. Not right. Only are you fully blinked out, but you're also good, which must just absolutely infuriate people.
Maybe it does. Yeah. Maybe it does.
I mean, in the best way.
In the best way.
It's like that's a them problem, not
that's
you
a them problem.
Problem.
You know,
not all dogs want to come and say hello.
Exactly. You know,
it's like these are the kind of lessons that I am able to teach you.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
that's not true. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. As per, you know, the past couple months, we have our quarterly merch promotion going on right now, which is that if you sign up at the $25 tier over on Patreon, you will be included in our Q3 quarterly merch, which is going to be our lovely, beautiful calendar. We're going to get all of our photo shoots together. These will go out before the end of the year. So starting Jan 1, 2026, you will have your fresh new popcorn culture calendar, complete with all sorts of fun little, you know, like annual traditions and moments and, you know, the things that you've come to know from listening to the show, maybe probably. If you want to check it out, patreon.com/popcornculture. Or if you have any feedback for the show, send it on over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. I promise I do read your emails. Otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.